Sluddy Sport met Ruben en Arnold op Groot FM 90.5.
Okay, wow.
Wow, wat?
Nee, wag het gaan.
Wow, wat?
Ek wil net gou vir jou sê.
Wat?
Ek sou hier op my foon.
Ja.
Ek het net my horlosie gesien. Nee, wag, ek gee nou.
Ja.
Ek het net my horlosie gesien met my foon.
Mhm.
Daar staan
ja, okay, kom ek stop net gou die bus daar want ek moet nou net vir ons luisteraars sê Ruben het vanaand saam met my kom hardloop by Tuks. Op die baan, op die tartan, daai mooi blou tartan. Ja, okay, vertel nou verder. Ja.
My horlosie vra nou vir my die volgende vraag. Did you run with Arnold Geertz? Because you are broken. You are broken.
Jy bedoel jou foon ken my naam.
Did you run with Arnold Geertz? Because you are broken.
Onthou jy,
you cannot be fixed.
Dit was voor jou tyd, maar daar was 'n ongelooflike kommentator, africhter en atleet op sy tyd, 'n absolute legende met die naam van John Short.
Ja.
En toe ek een keer klaar supersport kommentaar oor atletiek gedoen het saam met oom John, toe sê hy vir my, Annie, jy ken al die woorde se name, man.
Dit is mooi. Weet jy my maat, ek moet vir jou sê, jy is sterk op pad kommers toe, maar jy lyk goed, hè?
Ja, nee, maar jy self, hoorie, ek wil ook nie terugverwijs na verlede saterdag se 10 kilometer.
Ja.
4 minute, 38 sekondes per kilometer, jy het jou persoonlike beste, jy het hom verpletter.
Ja, maar dis nie nou die punt hier, die punt is, jy is op pad kommers toe, jy is op 'n rol, want ek moet vir jou sê,
en dis nie 'n salami rol nie.
Ja, maar hoeveel kilo's jy het gister 30 gaan doen, vandag het jy baan weg.
Ja, so ons het vandag, ek en jy het saam 14 kilo's gedoen.
Het was lekker.
So, het was baie lekker, en gister was 'n goeie dag. Nee, ek is op pad. Ons, die bus rol mooi. Die bus rol mooi.
Hoeveel stuk kommers is dit vir jou?
13de, 12de.
Yes.
12de een wat ek gaan klaarmaak, die 15de een wat ek begin.
Joh, Arnie, nee, well done. Ek moet sê, ek is baie opgewonde vir jou tyd hier.
Nee, ek sal.
Ek dink, jy is in shape en ek het gesien vandag op baie baan, ek sê, joh, die man is al raar. Tot die coaches al langs die pad sê, looking good, Arnie, looking good.
Arnie, jammer, hulle voel jammer vir my.
Nou hoorie, ons het nou ook op een stadion toe praat ons langs die veld, te sê ons, hoorie, wat is die Afrikaans toch...
Wat is die Afrikaans vir 10-pin bowling?
Ek kon nie daarop uitkom nie, maar miskien gaan Werner ons help, want Werner is die man wat verstaan van hierdie goed. Werner, eerstens goeie naand en welkom hier. As ons vanavond bietjie oor ons woorde val en ons is nie gefokus nie, ons is gebel, ek, laat ek eerder sê, ek is gebreek vanavond. Dis normaal vir Adi. Goeie naand en welkom hier.
Ja,
goeie naand julle.
Wat is die Afrikaans?
Dis kegelbal.
Ek het jou gesê.
Jy's reg.
Wat het jy gesê? Wat het jy gesê? 10 maal bal val, dit was iets verskriklik in elk geval. Werner, ja, een van die dinge wat altyd vir my fascinerend is, is dis een van daai met groot respek, dis een van die kleiner sportsoorte, maar daar is bykans niemand in die land wat het nog nie gespeel het nie. Dis die wonderlike ding daarvan, want mense ken 10-pin bowling. Dis iets wat hulle gaan doen as 'n normale ding elke nou en dan.
Ja, is 'n baie sosiale sport, so ek bedoel, ons het daai tyd by Kingsley, het jy of by Sterland gaan ijskaats of het by Kingsley 10-pin bowling gespeel.
Ja.
So kom ons kom gaga vir die mense wat totaal en al leke is, wat nou nie weet hoe hierdie story werk nie. Hoe werk die liga? Kom ons begin daar.
Ok, ons speel op 'n maandag, ons speel ons liga by Menlyn.
Ja.
Dis 'n span van 4 mense, dis R150 'n aand, en is 3 games, en dan, ja, jy speel op rondom Tali, so jy speel elke week in 'n ander span van die 12 spanne,
ja.
En ja, Storm ran hy liga so, hy ran nou al vir 5-6 jaar, en
ja.
Ek kan met trots sê, dat die span waarin ek en Storm speel, is in die laaste 6 jaar, is ons 5 keer kampioen.
Eita, dit wil gedoen. En dis kompeterend, ek meen, daar is nie, jy kan nie fout maak nie.
Ok. Ek wil net gou daar inval, want ek het die voorreg gehad om saam met hierdie manne te gaan speel.
Ek weet,
nee,
ja.
Wacht, nie die voorreg, hierdie fout. Want jy staan nie 'n kans, selfs met 'n handicap. Hierdie ouens is, maar toe ek nou, Storm en jy het onder andere, bietjie vir my, jy weet, van die ouens, wat vir my so lekker is, die ouens vat jou op die baan, hulle wys hoe dit werk. Ek het nie geweet so tegnies nie. Selfs net die baan, hoe die baan geolie word. Ah nie, dit is verskriklik tegnies. Jy kan ons dalk so bietjie meer van dit vertel.
Ja, daar's obviously 'n klomp aspekte wat te werk speel, weet die bane word geolie op 'n verskillende manier, die balle waarmee jy speel is verskillend, daar is verskillende white blocks in elkeen, ja. So, ja, hy doen elke keer iets anderste, en dit hang ook maar af van die temperatuur, nou het ons in Egypte gespeel, is bietjie warmer, so, dit verander die kompleksiteit van waarop jy speel.
Ja.
Wat vir my baie dieselfde is, en dis eintlik verbasend, of jy 'n golfhou slaan, en of jy 'n tennishou slaan, en of jy spies gooi, of jy kegelbal speel, die aksie is verskriklik baie dieselfde. Nou mense sal sê, maar jy weet nie waarvan jy praat nie, maar dit is presies dieselfde idee. Gewig terug, gewig deur, daar's 'n afleweringspunt en jy moet deurvolg. Yes. En dis hoe dit gebeur.
100%, ja.
Dis my altyd verbaas, maar ek moet ook sê, daar is soveel meer dinge by kegelbal wat kan verkeerd gaan, dis baie soos golf. Daar is een menigmal van dinge wat kan verkeerd gaan.
Ja, vir alles mense het bietjie ernstiger begin opneem, maar ja, as jy eers die basiese goed leer, soos wat ons vir Ruben hulle geleer het, hy het 'n goeie game gespeel.
Nee, hy is een atleet hierdie ou, hy dink net nie hy is een nie, maar hy is een.
Ja, maar ek is ook die nederigste ou wat jy ken.
Ja, ja, dis ook seker waar, nou help ek ook nou nie seker daarmee.
Soos alle blauwe ondersteuning.
Oh, daar gaat ons, yes. Mooi man.
Ok, maar ook, ek moet sê, ons is baie trots op julle, want jy weet, Bowling South Africa, dis nou, laat ons dit gaan verstaan, hoe lyk hierdie span Bowling South Africa, is dit net in Pretoria of is dit reg oor Suid-Afrika?
Nee, dis reg oor Suid-Afrika, so ons het verskillende provinsies, daai provinsies is nou al opgedeel in streke, soos Tshwane en Ekurhuleni, en dan, ja, daar is uit die aard van die saak uit spelers in Port Elizabeth, in Kaapstad, in Durban. So ons speel, jaarliks speel ons interprovinsiaal teen mekaar, ja. En daar is aantal punte wat saam optel na, noem het nou maar, Protea span toe.
Ok, en dan hoe word die span saamgestel wat na die volgende vlak toe gaan om deel te neem? Is dit punte nie?
Ja, okay. Nee, dit gaan nou maar oor performance, yes. Weet jy, ons speel een keer 'n maand, speel ons 'n toernooi, iewers in die land, weet elke maand is dit iets anderste, en al daai goed word nou maar saamgetel en okay. Die bestes word gekies.
So, toe het julle nou gaan deelneem net onlangs, wanneer was dit, 2 weke terug?
Ja, ons het Sondag teruggekom, so ja. Is 'n week terug.
Nog vars, the Second African Zone Championship, het ek het reg?
Yes.
En dit was in Egypte gewees in Cairo wat julle deelgeneem het.
100%.
Vertel ons so 'n bietjie, hoe lank was dit, watse lande deelgeneem, vertel ons 'n bietjie van die toernooi.
Ja, ons het daar deelgeneem, dit was so 10 dae, wat vroeër jare, was ons deel van die European Zone en toe het hulle ons afgebreek dat die Afrika lande teen mekaar kompeteer en dan optel na die World Championships toe. So, by hierdie spesifieke een was Egyptian, was Ghana, Ethiopië, Tunesië, Nigerië, Senegal en dan onsself. En dan ja, ons, daar was 4 Asiëse lande uitgenooi, maar as gevolg nou maar van al die gemors wereldwijd met COVID en so meer, het hulle toe nog gekanseleer op die laaste oomblik.
En julle het werklik waar goed gedoen, Werner?
Ja, ons het. Ons het, baie jare laas het ons span gestuur, so hierdie was nou nogal vir ons een eye-opener gewees om in die laaste 5 jaar weer een span te stuur en ons het heeltemal bo verwagting gecompeteer. Ek was nogal heel impressed.
So vertel ons 'n bietjie van die resultate.
Kyk, ons het jy speel a singles en a doubles en a trios en dan as a team speel jy saam en dan a masters final en ons het in geheel het ons 11 medaljes gewen.
Wow.
Waarvan die span waarin ek gespeel of die kombinasies waarin ek gespeel het, het ek 'n silver medalje en 2 goue medaljes gekry.
Prachtig.
So ja, dit was nogal 'n groot geleentheid vir ons allemaal.
Sit dit net vir ons in context, as julle sou gaan deelneem in Amerika, waar die sport natuurlijk massief groot is en waar dit 'n beroepsport is, waar dink jy sou julle plaas? Kijk, dit is moeilik om te sê.
Ja, kyk, op die oomblik, dink ek is ons nog 'n bietjie wyd van daar, of jy sal verbaas wees om te weet dat in Europa, in Engeland, in Finland, in daai, wil ek amper sê Skandinawiese lande, is die sport baie groot. So ja, Amerika is nou maar die trendsetters, maar... Ja. Die Europese lande kan nogal die kers vasthou met daai manne. So nee, ek glo ons kan challenge vir 'n top 10, top 20 posisie, maar ja, daar is nog bietjie werk.
Ja, ek dink die oomblik as mense in 'n beroeps- of 'n professionele liga in 'n situasie opeindig, dan is dit natuurlik totaal anders. Julle is allemaal ouens wat deeltyd speel, nie een van julle is voltyds nie, so dit maak 'n groot verskil.
Ja, dit maak, ek bedoel, ek het ewe nou in Egypte gesien, amper helfte van daai span is professionele spelers, want is vir hulle makliker om in Europa te kompeteer. En ja, in Amerika gaan jy speel teen heeltemal professionele spelers, waar ons nie is nie.
Net gevinnige vraag, hoe oud was jy toe begin speel het?
Ek was 7-8 jaar oud, ek wow. Bedoel, en op daai stadium het, weet, voor dit het ek as 'n baba groot geword onder van die greats wat die sport gespeel het, so Ek het letterlik groot geword in die Kingsley Bowling Alley.
En hierdie is wat is jou grootste toernooi tot dusver?
Ja, ja, nie by verre. Ek bedoel ek joke altyd as mense sê maar hy was 'n overnight sukses dan sê ek ja, dit het my 30 jaar gevat om overnight sukses te word.
So. Is so, dis altyd selfs.
Ja, nee, dit was by verre die grootste event waarin ek nog gespeel het. Daar het baie trane geloop.
Ek is geïnteresseerd om te sien jy sê hier op jou e-pos vir ons Dr. Henning Gericke, die sportsielkundige het jou baie gehelp. Vertel vir my daarvan.
Ja, dit is nie iets wat ons nogal van tevore aangespreek het nie, maar dit was nogal belangrik gewees en ek is 'n kronige Henning Gericke fan nou al jare lank.
Ons almal hoor.
Ek het al sy boeke gelees en so ek het hom so 'n paar maande terug gekontak en gesê ek wil 'n bietjie tyd met hom spandeer en hy tyd met die span spandeer en met my spesifiek en wat 'n ongelooflike mens. Dis verseker iets wat ons meer aan aandag moet gee.
Wat is die grootste ding wat hy jou geleer het?
Ek was pad om myself nou te vra, ja.
Wel, hy het vandag een af vir my gesê, jy is 'n kampioen, Werner. So hy het gesê, staan in die spieël en sê vir jouself, jy is 'n kampioen. Maak nie saak wat alles in jou verlede gebeur het of hoe lank het jou gevat het om hier te kom. Wees net die kampioen wat jy glo jy is in jouself.
Mm.
So ongelooflike mens ek, ja.
Positive affirmations. Daai selfde ding wat Jannie Pitter ook net, dieselfde ding oor en oor altyd sê.
Daar's 'n les vir ons almal, Werner. Ek het 'n pel wat sê hy staan elke oggend op en hy kyk homself in die spieël en hy sê ek is lief vir jou. Jy is 'n kampioen. Daar's niks wat jy kan doen wat ons nie kan regmaak ek en jy saam nie. Kom ons gaan doen die dag vandag.
Kom aan.
Dis die manier om dit te doen, nie waar?
Nee, verseker. Nee, verseker. So wat is volgende vir span Suid-Afrika en vir Werner? Wat temp en bowling of kegelbal dan betref?
Wel, op die oomblik wil ons obviously ek glo ons het nou gekwalifiseer vir die wêreldkampioenskappe wat in November is. Waar dit spesifiek gaan wees, dit was van tevore in Dubai, daar's 'n bietjie striwelinge waar dit gaan wees, maar dit sal ons volgende mylpaal wees en obviously bly ons net hard werk. Ons neem nou die naweek deel aan die Arnold Classic wat 'n multisports event is.
Arnold Classic, ja.
So ja, dit is die event waarin ek die naweek deelneem en obviously my beste probeer gee om die volgende span weer te probeer.
Ek het geweet kegelbal is ja, by die Arnold Classic. Ja,
maar daar's 'n massiewe lot sporte. Ek dink daar's iets so 17 verskillende sportsoorte
van die Arnold. Is hy hier jaar?
Ek weet nie, ek weet eerlikwaar nie. Maar is jy in Sandton?
Ja, nee, hulle het hom geskuif na Randburg toe.
So, okay.
Hulle het 'n hele tent city daar opgerig vir al die kleiner sporte en met daai bedoel ek hulle doen judo en ander sportsoorte ook. So dis 'n lekker maatstaf vir ons om in te speel waar daar nou nie 'n rugby of 'n cricket of 'n sweets groot is nie.
Jy weet die laaste keer toe ek met hom onderhoud gevoer het by die Arnold Classic so 5 jaar terug, ek het sy boek gelees en dis 'n fantastiese boek en jy kyk net na alles wat hy al gedoen het in sy lewe en toe sê ek vir hom op 'n stadium, "But Arnold, you seem to fit so much into your life. How do you do it?" Toe sê hy, "All I do is I sleep faster."
Dis mooi, I love it. Werner, net gou vinnig, ons tyd hardloop baie vinnig uit. Vir mense wat wel betrokke raak, dalk is daar iemand wat nou luister en sê, "Ek hoorie, maar dis iets wat ek sal oorweeg om deel te neem en hopelik eendag ook in die wêreldkampioenskap te kan speel." Waar kry hulle meer info?
Ja, toe ons hiernatoe nou ek hiernatoe gery het, het iemand ook hulle gesê hulle wil hulle jong seun laat speel. Toe sê ek al wat jy moet doen is opdaag. So ons het by Menlyn 'n liga, jy's baie welkom enige iemand en soos jy weet, ons maak jou touwys en ons maak jou deel van die liga. So enige iemand is welkom. Ek kan my details vir julle gee.
Ja.
Stormsin wat die liga is en asseblief maak kontak met ons. Daar's altyd plek vir nuwe mense. En gelukkig is dit 'n sport wat kan gespeel word van 8 jaar oud tot 80 jaar oud.
Yes, ja. Ja.
Dis die stem van Werner Groenewald wat nou net suksesvol was saam met die Suid-Afrikaanse span in kegelbal daar in Egipte by die Zone 2 kampioenskap. Werner, baie dankie vir jou tyd om aan te steek daaraan. Laat weet ons as ons weer vir jou in die ateljee kan kom kry, hoor.
Ja, verseker, dit was my voorreg. Thanks julle.
Dankie julle. Nou ja, Annie, ons gaan 'n breek vat. En dan net hierna gaan ons verder.
Dan praat ons oor K2, sekerlik die wêreld se moeilikste berg om te klim.
Ek kan nie wag om hieroor te gesels nie, want jy het my vlugtig verlede week hieroor vertel en ek is soos wat het ek reg gehoor?
Ja.
So baie vir hierdie naby net waar is.
Sluddy Sport met trots geborg deur webuycars.co.za.
Okay, nou luister hier, Annie, ons het verlede week toe praat ons op Sluddy Sport, praat ons oor hierdie storie en ek het my oor nie geglo nie. Want ek meen as jy gaan kyk na die realiteit van hierdie volgende sport waar ons praat. En wat net die realiteit. Kom ons nou ons sal nou skets. Dan dink ek vir myself, eerstens hoekom pak jy suits aan?
Ja, dis die eerste vraag. Heel duidelik, dis die eerste vraag. En dan die tweede vraag is wat gebeur daarna? Want dis 'n massiewe ding as jy dit eers gedoen het. So ons gesels vanaand met Robbie Cogetin wat een van 4 Suid-Afrikaners is wat oor so bietjie minder as 2 weke na K2 toe vlieg. Nou K2 is die wêreld se tweede hoogste berg. Hy's net 237 meter kleiner of korter as wat Everest is. En die vier manne van Suid-Afrika het nou al alles geklim wat hulle kon. Maar daar was nog nooit 'n Suid-Afrikaner bo op K2 nie. Maar hier's die skrikwekkende ding. Twee skrikwekkende dinge, inteendeel. Van elke vier klimmers wat K2 klim, is daar een wat dit nie maak nie. Een uit elke vier maak nie. Net 377 klimmers het dit al reeds gedoen, teenoor die 6000 plus wat al reeds op Everest was.
Kan ek
maar,
jou vraag, net so voor ons aangaan.
Ja.
Wat is hier, wat, kom ons vergelijk het met Everest. Wat sê die stat min of meer van Everest? Survival rate.
Ja, ek dink dis meer as dit. Ja. Dis meer as dit op die ou einde.
So is hier net 'n meer
Dis meer technies, maar ons is nou by Robbie Hood. Dis die een ding en daar is nie plek om weg te kruip hier nie. Ah. Maar die ander ding is, meer mense was in die buitenste ruimte as wat al ooit op K2 gestaan het.
Oh, wow.
Dis nog meer indrukwekkend. Robbie Cogetin, welcome on Groot FM and Slotty Sport. Really good to have you with us. When we did the launch last week, you were bubbly and ready for this thing. What are you feeling like now? Are the butterflies flying in formation or not?
No, anything but that. Thank you. And great to be on the show. And Arnold, as the day gets a little bit closer for us to jump on a plane and head off to Pakistan, it just becomes more and more real. I'm finding a lot of things that still need to be done, tiny little details that need to be tied up. And those butterflies are, they're feeling more like, what do they say in Afrikaans? Brommer. Knocking around in my stomach. That's what they're like.
At the top of your CV, it says you're 44 years old, and then open brackets, old enough to know better, young enough to do it anyway, close brackets. Robbie, really? Seriously? I think everyone I've spoken to over the last few weeks that I've mentioned that I was lucky enough to do your launch last week says to me, why? Mm. Why?
It is. It's a very difficult question, and I guarantee you will be asking ourselves that 1,000 times a day while we're up there. But the short answer is this is what happens to the kids that never learn to play rugby. you know what? I've always been attracted to the mountains. There's just something inside of me that's like a magnetism towards the high places. Just looking at it in books, there's just something that calls to me. You know, I never fell in love with the muscle cars or Formula One or anything like that. Cars do absolutely nothing for me. But mountains, that sort of thing, is just a little spark inside of me that I find very difficult to explain to others.
So Ruben, yeah, I just want to find out quickly, in terms of preparation for this, what does that entail exactly?
So there's a number of areas of preparation. Physically is the first one most people think. How do you get fit enough to do this sort of thing? And it's a weird one because at altitude, your body behaves so differently.
Mm-hmm.
At any point in time, you're focusing on keeping your heart rate down. At Camp 4 on Everest 13 years ago, lying on my back, I took a heart rate reading of 128 beats per minute,
wow,
lying down, doing nothing.
Mm. Wow.
And in preparation for us, we're doing everything from specific training to dragging tires. I've got a 25-kilogram truck tire called Doris. And I take Doris for a walk around the park. We try and clock up as many kilometers as we can. To going to the step machine to the gym. Yesterday, I spent 2 hours on the step machine with a 10-kilogram backpack. To, some of the guys in the team are great runners. Warren's doing some swimming sets. I think it's too cold for that. But, I think I'm in for a bit of a surprise on that front. But, we do whatever we can to get some thick sort of legs, especially. It's all endurance. And, we try and get as fit as we possibly can.
Your CV has got here 9 times on Kilimanjaro, Mount Elbrus 3 times, Aconcagua, Mount Everest, Leboche East, Kosciuszko, Alpamayo, Pesco. There's virtually not one of the big ones that you haven't done yet, Robbie. And then K2 comes along. And I've listened to the rest of your crew and the Warren Eva together with John Black and Alan Dickinson, the four of you. And all of you are saying this is the one. Is it really like that?
Amongst mountains, I suppose in the running world, until these long ultra sky runs and all of these events came along, Comrades was the one. And I suppose for a lot of people, it really is. K2 is considered as the mountain of mountains, the ultimate climb. It has everything. It's got altitude, it has exposure, it has danger, it's got technicality to it, and it's remote. I mean, it's a 10-day walk to get to the base of the mountain. And so, yeah, it really is the... it's the cherry on the cherry on the cherry on top.
So what exactly does one take along with you on a big attempt like this? I mean, because obviously weight's going to play a massive role. You don't want to take too much stuff, but you don't want to be undersupplied.
Yeah, I mean, it boils down to whatever, and it's quite something you talk about how things are going. One of the things that's realizing that I've come to realize in the last couple of days is I'm about to pack my entire life into three duffel bags.
Yes.
You know, whatever goes on the plane in three little 20 bags is everything I have at my disposal for the next 9 weeks. And it's everything from our cold weather gear, because higher up the mountain we'll be experiencing temperatures down to minus 60. So the specialist climbing gear, yeah, I know. And everyone's complaining about this little cold
snap. Yeah,
I think we'll stop complaining right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. It's toiletries, it's climbing equipment, down to comfort food, so lots of snacks and high-energy stuff for while we're climbing. It's even down to the little teddy bear that I've taken on every single climbing expedition of mine. So, we have probably a 5-page Excel spreadsheet of you've got to have everything from toothbrush, sunblock, climbing boots, sunglasses, spare sunglasses, spare sunglasses and goggles, things like that. And it's a meticulous process.
Robbie, your fundraising campaign is to raise awareness and also begin conversations around mental wellness, particularly depression and anxiety. And if you want to know more about that, that's hashtag ask for help. Tell us more about that, please.
That's one of the things that's been brought to the fore and unfortunately not enough by COVID. One in four South Africans suffer from mental health issues.
Look, in the case of the four of you, it's all four of you, isn't it?
Crazy's not on the disability list just yet. We're working on it. One in four South Africans are affected by depression and anxiety. And it's a scary statistic that 10 people a day in South Africa are committing suicide. And for every 10 successful people, and successful is a horrible word to use, but for every 10 people that go through with it properly, there are 10 people who are attempting it. So there's 100 suicide attempts a day. And that's just a sign of the times that we aren't, especially as men, you know, we're told to cowboy up, you know, back up, stop complaining, life's fine, you know, just grit your teeth and all I want to do is get people to start talking about it. I always say, if you've got dodgy knees, you know, you'll tell everyone at the braai. But if there's something, if you're struggling with something in terms of mental wellness, it's the dirtiest, darkest secret. It's seen as a weakness. It's seen as a disability. Mm. And I'm trying to, if anything, change that. Because I'll openly admit it. I suffer from depression and anxiety, and so did my father, which led to his death, which is possibly one of the biggest driving forces for me to try and get this out in the open and start just talking about it, letting people know that there is help out there.
Wow. Robbie, do you think it is more prevalent for South African men in general in world terms as compared to others? Because we have a particularly bad streak of this macho thing, if you like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are, depending on whatever demographic you come from, we, from young, we are told, you know, you're a warrior. You're a strong man. It's your job to carry everyone. It's your job to be the strong pillar.
Yeah, and cowboys don't cry, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, cowboys don't cry. It is your job to be this pillar of strength. And at the end of the day, we're all human. And, so if I can do something crazy enough and walk up a hill and inspire someone to just ask for help, that's where it comes from. If you can just reach out, speak to a friend, speak to a psychologist, find a support group. People want to help and people want to hear. You're not alone in this. And if I can get one person to choose to put the gun down or to choose to put a bottle of tablets down, then it's a success, whether I get to the top of the mountain or not.
And I think there's so much significance in taking on a big, big challenge. I almost say something else now. A big challenge like this, because I mean, a lot of the struggles and things that one faces, that one goes through with mental challenges like this, as you just mentioned earlier, a lot of it pulls through during a big challenge like this. Isn't it true?
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, for me, particularly the ideas of self-doubt, that's probably my biggest nemesis. Wow. Yeah, self-doubt and this struggle and loneliness of feeling disconnected from the world. This is the epitome of all of that.
Sure.
And I'm just lucky enough to have a team of incredible, incredible friends that we pull through. And we're there for each other, and we know that.
Robbie, I'm also very interested to talk with you, and we mentioned this at the launch, but it is interesting. So pulmonary edema, and then, of course, HAPE and HACE, both of them. So the one is attacks the lungs, the other one the brain at a certain altitude. Just talk us through that and what can happen up there on that little hill.
Okay. So the way the body can react to altitude, and it's not – you find when people are doing Kilimanjaro and those sorts of things, all the research and reading you'll do on the internet says that it's compulsory, you will get it, and you're going to die. And so people are quite panicked about it. But unfortunately, there is nothing to separate those that will get it or won't get it. It's luck or bad luck of the draw. And what it is as the body goes to higher altitudes, the decrease in air pressure creates fluid to literally leak out of your blood vessels, through the walls of your blood vessels, and that liquid accumulates either in your lungs or in your brain. And so that's with cerebral being the brain and pulmonary around the lungs. With cerebral edema, that fluid accumulating in your brain, it becomes unbearable pressure, and it starts off with headaches, can go towards dizziness, hallucinations, confusion, and eventually, if untreated, it becomes, you black out, it becomes a coma, and it's deadly. It's absolutely fatal. The only way to treat altitude sickness is to descend to a lower altitude. With pulmonary edema, that fluid accumulates in your lungs. And if you've ever had bronchitis, you know that rattle, that crackle noise when you're lying on your back and you can hear the fluid in your lungs moving.
Wow.
And that's you know, it's a terrifying, terrifying experience. You feel like your lungs are shrinking until, you know, you're breathing, you're gasping for air, but you're not absorbing any oxygen. And a person will literally drown in their own fluids if they don't treat altitude sickness with emergency drugs and getting to a lower altitude very fast.
So here's my question. Is there any way of somehow preparing for this?
There's literally no way. I mean, the American military, when they wanted to drop soldiers in the high mountains of Afghanistan, they were doing a lot of research with regards to altitude and is there a gene that says you'll get it, you won't. But unfortunately, their research came back absolutely blank. There's nothing. I mean, I've had, like I said, 9 summits of Kilimanjaro. My next one could put me flat on my back. Yeah. There's nothing we can do to prepare about. Yeah, you can't train and sort of bank altitude. There's nothing you can do. You've got to basically take it. And one of the best ways to do that is to ascend slowly. Mm. So that's why we are taking 10 days to walk to base camp.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Robbie, the other thing that is fascinating for me, and I love how the preparation, it just shows you preparation is everything. You guys are going to, I looked at the video of the ride, as I said to you during the launch, the 7-hour ride on the side of the mountain scares me more than the climb itself. I don't know how you boys are going to do that, but my bum is going to be clenched for you. I will say that much. Then you walk the 10 days and that already helps the acclimatization. But then just take us through the process because you get to base camp, then you may sleep there for a day or two, up to camp 1, which the porters will have built for you, then you come down. Camp 2, and then you come down 3, and then eventually 4, and then the push for the summer. Just talk us through how you're planning to do that.
So we'll be flying Johannesburg to Doha to Islamabad. Then we spend 2 days in Islamabad where we'll be sorting out final logistics before jumping on a tiny little plane to go to a place called Askol, which is literally the Askol of the whole planet. It's tiny. Don't blink, you will miss it. I can't even say it's a one horse town, it's a one donkey town. And from there, we'll jump into some 4x4s and we'll literally head out for an entire day, possibly 2 days, depending on the conditions of the roads. And we'll be driving on some of the most interesting sort of single track stuff that we've ever encountered, which is going to be a challenge. As I mentioned before, at the launch, I wasn't joking when I told the guys they're sick. But he didn't let me drive either, so it's a bit of a lose-lose situation. But from there, then we start moving up the Baltoro Glacier, up a valley towards K2, probably covering between 8 and 12 Ks a day, where each night we'll be settling down, setting up a camp, having something to eat, get the night's rest, and then move on the next day until we eventually at an altitude of 5,100 meters at the foot of K2.
Let me stop you there for a second. So the difference here between the Everest, where you leave the main town and you make your way through and you eventually get to base camp, there are little towns in between. Here in Pakistan, there is literally nothing in between. You've got to take everything with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, as you mentioned, on Everest, you get to stop in the villages and there's beautiful little wooden tea houses. And you can choose your food off a menu. You sleep on a mattress. And it's really, it's the best accommodation you're going to get if you consider where you are. But from K2, the moment we leave Askol, we are nowhere. It's literally like walking through the Karoo. There's nothing. There literally is nothing. Any water gets taken from a river. We melt ice. Food is carried with us, which is why we have such a big support team. Yeah, we literally are on our own. Yeah.
Tell me quickly, you mentioned that you do, if I have it correct, just correct me if I'm wrong, you said about 8 to 10 Ks per day.
Yeah.
How long does that take you per day to do the 8 to 10 Ks?
So it's the longer you take, the better it actually is. Because just like on Kilimanjaro, you want to take your time to acclimatize. You're not trying to break any records. You are literally taking in the sights, paid a lot of money for the trip, take a lot of photos. You want to take your time, get into camp, keep it done. You don't want to race and risk an injury, twist an ankle or a knee. And it's all preparation for the main event. So you've got to take it easy.
And then once you get to base camp, what's the plan then, Robbie?
From base camp, we'll probably have a day or two's rest. And all of this can be shifted around by the weather. So this is the sort of, the idea we have in our head. The mountain will always have its own plan. But we'll rest up for a day or two, and then we'll probably start making our way up to Camp 1. We'll take a load carry, take some of the necessary stuff, oxygen bottles, tents, some food supplies, and drop them off where Camp 2 will be, probably set up a tent, and then make our way back down, have a rest day, and then maybe make our way up to Camp 1 again, maybe spend the night there, push up to Camp 2, and then come back down again, and do that for Camp 2 and 3, and then come down and wait for a final push, where we'll probably be able to move to Camp 2 in a single day, because now we're acclimatized and mountain fit, as you could call it. And we'll move to Camp 2, and then probably move up to 3, spend the night, move into 4, which we'll probably get there in the late afternoon, and hopefully push for a summit, but anywhere from 10 o'clock that night till 1 o'clock. We'd look at leaving around that time, midnight, and make our way to the summit for what could be anything between 12 and 20 hours round trip from Camp 4 to the summit and back to spend the night, and then pack up, move our way down, probably spend a night at Camp 2, move our way down to base camp, pack up everything, and then start the 4 or 5 day trek out. Wow. So it's a different path, and it's a bit quicker. So, that's why we'll be leaving 14th of June and only back on the 15th of August. So it's a process. It's a slow, deliberate process.
It sounds absolutely amazing.
Such an adventure.
Robbie, I also wanted to hear from you. You've got this incredible drive to get a whole bunch of people to put their names on this banner that you're going to take to the second highest point in the world. Just tell us about that for a second or two.
Well, thank you. So part of what I'm doing for the fundraising is I'm taking a summit banner to the top, which we are waiting to hear if it's going to be a world record. So we have contacted Guinness World Records, and it's going to be the largest summit banner on K2. We did it for Everest in 2009, and we've broken the banner up into little blocks. And for R1,000, you can buy one of the blocks, and you can put your company logo on there. You can put a picture of your wife, your girlfriend, your wife's girlfriend, whatever you want. You're more than welcome to put that on the banner, and we're printing it all on one piece of fabric, and we're taking that to the top, and you can be a part of the journey with us. And that's just what people have been amazing. The support has come from all over the world, climbing friends from Canada, my dentist. The support has just been absolutely, I'm dumbfounded. Not often I'm at a loss for words.
We did have a laugh about that because we joked about your dentist. And then, of course, he said that is one of the problems that you may experience at high altitude is that your fillings may give you trouble at altitude.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you've got a little air bubble stuck in a filling somewhere, and the higher you go up, the lack of air pressure, that bubble starts to expand.
No way.
All of a sudden, you've got a jackhammer in the back of your head. We literally have had to look at every single aspect, from ingrown toenails to the dentist, contact lenses. Everything is a concern. Yeah.
Unreal. Absolutely unreal. Well, keep those crampons as sharp as you can and keep those oxygen bottles going. We are absolutely confident that the four of you boys will be the first South Africans on top of K2. Robbie, such a pleasure and an honor to chat with you.
Wow, thank you.
We'll remember you in our prayers, buddy, and know that the whole of South Africa is with you. Just you go and do the business, please.
That is absolutely incredible. Thank you so much. We really do appreciate the support. You have no idea what it means to us. We go up on people power.
And in the words of your dentist, fastbite word. Fastbite.
Lovely. Ons het nou net met Robbie Cogetin gepraat, een van vier Suid-Afrikaners, wat binnen die volgende twee weke op pad is Pakistan toe om K2, die tweede grootste berg in die wereld, te klim. Hy is die skrywer van die boek Mind Over Mountain. En dis a interessante lees. Robbie, best of luck. I won't say break a leg, because that's one thing you don't want to say to a mountaineer. You just go and kick some K2 butt, will you?
Thank you so much, guys. That's really been incredible.
Take care. God bless.
Well, bye.
Ja, dis, ek weet nie, Ruben, dis 'n ander tipe van mens wat die ding doen, hoor. Ek moet jou sê, ek ben, die dinge wat ons doen, hardloop gewys, is hard. Maar hierdie is anders.
Ek vind dit net vir
hierdie is anders.
Die baanwerk vandag is my genoeg. Anyway, en daar gelag. My maat, ons tyd hardloop. Kom ons kyk gou vinnig na die naweek se wedstryde. Kom ons kyk vinnig maar by die tennis.
En Daniel, ek wil gou-gou gesels oor die twee semifinale, die halfeindstryde by Roland Garros. Cory Gauff het nou net vir Martina Trevisan 6-3 en 6-1 geklop en Iga Swiatek het vir Daria Kasatkina 6-2 en 6-1 geklop.
Hoe is daai statistiek van Swiatek nie?
Ja, ongelooflik 33 wedstryde in 'n ry, dis nou dieselfde as mevrou Williams in dit wil gedoen word. Ek moet net hierdie inkry. Ek moet dit net sê, die Cheetahs het vandag die champagne oopgebreek, want hulle is op pad na die Euro uitdaagbeker in Europa en Havies vir en sy manne sê, alles bitter bly. Ek ook, boys.
Wel, ons is allemaal bly. Ja, Suid-Afrikaanse rugby is dit 'n wonderlike ding en ons is regtig bly daaroor. Ek wil wel net vir jou sê, ek was baie ongekrap met jou span se vertoning.
Nee, ek self. Ek self,
wat
ek
het fout gegaan?
Ek het nog net swart onderbroeke aan van verlede Saterdag af. Nee man is naar, ek weet nie.
Ja, hoor, dit was baie sleg.
Jy kan dit nie verduidelik nie, ek wil nie eers verder oor praat nie.
Los hom daar.
Môre om 4:00 is dit DHL WP teen die Windhoek Draft Griquas, dis daar by die Dani Cruyff Stadion in Stellenbosch en dan om 6:00 môre aan die Toyota Vrystaat 15-tal teen die Airlink Pumas, dis in Bloemfontein en Saterdag is dit die grote.
Boeja!
Ja. Dan is het sikke tyd, dan is het die Sharkies. En,
nee.
Ja.
Huh? Sê dit mooi.
Die
blou.
Die blou.
Die Woudekompuls.
Ja.
Ons gaan omvat.
Ek moet jou sê, ek dink, ek luister na alles wat daar van die Shark wereld afkom en ek sien Thomas de Toy sê, nee, maar hulle reis beter deesdae en al die soort van dinge en mooi geselsies, maar ja, ek weet nie so mooi nie, dis nie maklik om hier nou te kom en hier te kom wen nie.
Wel, dit gaan een groot game wees, ek kan nie wag, ek dink dit gaan een baie goeie en een baie mooi game wees.
Dit gaan beslis, en daar gaan baie mense van groot daar wees, so kom sê maar dag, dit gaan lekker wees. Daar is 'n losie daar, en ek weet, Ruben, jy gaan 10-10 in 'n megafoon daar.
Ek gaan myself gedra, maar sleg gedra, so kom ons maar een vorm.
Ook een vorm van gedrag. Nee, is so. Dit is so. Tyd vir ons om tot ziens te sê, maar net, ek wil jou dan net sê, ek het die lieflikste historiekie gehoor van hierdie groot blauwbel ondersteuner. Maar een groot blauwbel ondersteuner. In statuur en ook die manier wat hy sy span, soort, hy is mal oor sy span. En hy kom die aand by die huis na werk en sy ou vroukie het so 'n spinnerakkie van 'n onderkleerkie aan. Jy weet, so ou kleinst, en hy kyk haar so op en af en hy sê, en nou liefie, sy sê, man, maak my vas. en doen net wat jy wil.
Arnie.
Toe maak hy haar vas en toe gaat hy loftes toe.
Nou praai.
Sluddy Sport met Ruben en Arnold op Groot FM 90.5.